看来我们只能靠自己了。
地球错失了最后一次机会。
这座宫殿不是庇护所。
我觉得旁边的话或者哪辆你们女的都没
Hi everyone and welcome to Middle Earth, your source for insight into China cultural industry. Listen on to those who are making a living by creating and distributing art or content onto the world's second biggest cultural market. I'm your host, Aladin Faré. Over my years in China working in the local cultural industry, I could sense that there is a magic word that people were throwing around in meeting or public forum, IP, short for intellectual property. So legally, an IP is something that you own and that no one else can reproduce without your consent. But it seems that some producers, as the market becomes more and more complicated and the competition gets fiercer, see this IP thing as a silver bullet against failure. Some would believe that if you own an IP, based from a book for example, your film success would surely be obtained and that you can capitalize on that. I have firsthand witnessed that even in the documentary field where I work mostly, some people believe that filming real people's story can also be seen as a valuable investment to be resold in the future. But obviously, things are a little bit more complicated than that. To talk about this with three guests here in Beijing, in the flesh. First, Kevin Fang, hello.
Yeah, I'm Kevin. It is my honor to be here the second time. Personally, I'm a producer, working for over 10 years. Now I'm working for a Hollywood film company called Starlight, working as a deputy director of the Greater China business. And also I'm in charge of the Stars Collective, and that's a program to work with all the directors from all different countries.
So before Kevin came on episode 39, when we talked about like movie star power here in China, and also recently, like when we were having drinks afterward, like he was sharing some of his project regarding like how to adapt some IPs here in China as well. Next to you, Su Xinyi, hello.
Hi everyone, I'm Xinyi from Bridging the Dragon Sino-European Producers Association. My job here in Bridging the Dragon was to take care of the sales business for our members, both in China and Europe.
And actually, if you want to know more about Bridging the Dragon, like how this association works, you can listen to episode 30, where we had the founder, Cristiano Bortone, on Middle Earth. Like he explained the whole business, episode 30. And last, Dan Lei, hello.
Hello, my name is Dan Lei and I work at Gushi FM. Before joining Gushi FM, I worked in the film industry for about 10 years and I have noticed that topics based on real life issues are vastly popular with Chinese audiences. Recent films like Dying to Survive and Dearest have both seen huge success in the Chinese market. So I came to Gushi FM hoping to adapt their real life stories into films and TV series.
And as usual, for the translation.
Hello, this is me again. My name is Si Yi. I am an editor at the World of Chinese magazine.
Okay, so we'll first define the reason why IPs are getting so popular here in China, their advantage and their inconvenience. And we'll open the discussion if Chinese IP are actually going abroad. I think we could safely say that movies inspired from historical events such as the battle at Lake Changjin, which has the highest box office number in Chinese cinema, or movies like My People, My Country should be discarded as IPs because it is based from history and it's in the public domain. Before we move on to the recording, let me remind you that Middle Earth is produced by China Compass Production, your film production service in the Middle Kingdom. So if you need to find a location scouting for your next movie or bring your YouTube channel to Chinese platform, you can reach out. I think it would be a good thing to start like to give some background information of this entire topic to the audience. So if we can compare like how the market was like 10 years ago, can we give some brief comparison of how the film industry has evolved in terms of quality, budget, number of cinema screen and audience taste? If I may, I think Kevin, you are the most experienced, let's put it this way. So I guess you could start.
I was getting to the industry 12 years ago. So basically, I was one of the, you know, the industry person to witness this industry. Generally, the movie industry is going up, and for some special period, it's going really fast. You can see, you know, the screening, like the theaters are going really fast. China now is like, you know, the biggest the number of the theaters in the world. And of course, the numbers of the movie are also throwing up. And let's see, you know, of course, like the more and more good quality movies are coming up.
So everything so far so good, everything is better now.
Yeah, everything actually come to a turning point when the epidemic thing came. And now, like, it's very a hard time for the whole movie industry. A lot of companies, you know, they have a huge loss because of the epidemic thing. Also, plus another reason that there's a big change inside of the movie industry, or let's say the entertainment industry. For example, the policy, the tax issue, and so making the whole industry and having gone through a really difficult time, I think, now.
Yeah, I remember in my previous conversation with a film distributor, he was telling me that back then, like, people would just go to see any movies in the cinema, but today people, they really pick and choose the movie they want to go and watch. That was his feeling of the market. Dan Lay, you've been working as well, like, over a decade in this industry. Like, can you give us a sense of how things have changed and evolved over the years?
10 years ago, it was 2012. That's when I first started in the industry. I have seen some very big changes. So, for example, first of all, back then, a lot of the movies were still distributed in film copies, but now everything has gone digital. And the second thing is that in 2012, the movie that was seeing the highest box office was Lost in Thailand, which saw 1.2 billion in revenue, but now the highest has gone over 5 billion. And the third point is that back then, to buy movie tickets, we had to go to the theater and buy it there in person, but now everybody can just do it on their phones. And one point to add to the box office has gone up partly also because improvements in the screens and screening facilities within the theaters, and also the number of movies that we have available.
All right, so now that we have painted the background, like, we know how the industry has evolved. I mean, if I recall, like, the number of movies screened 10 years ago from today went from a few thousand to now like 40,000. So, I mean, and now China is the biggest film market in the world. I mean, maybe the US will go get that crown again after the COVID restriction gets better over there, but I think it's really one place where things have changed tremendously. So now, can we dive into the topic of IP? So as we can see, this market is really getting bigger, and I guess the competition is fierce. So can you tell us what's the advantage for people to, you know, buy an IP or build a movie around an IP, which often would come from a book or online novels?
For the industry, the IP, and you know, in China, I think back to 20, 30 years ago, like, the IP was still a strange word for us. And there was a time that, you know, it was a very hot debated topic, which is like, you know, in China, we don't have the very strong sense about the IP, about movie, about music, about everything, franchise stuff. But obviously, it is keeping changing. And better and better, and the Chinese people, we have, you know, more clearer and stronger understanding, and also the policy about the IP, the intellectual property. So ever since we paid attention to the IP, the IP thing, and it's keeping changing the way of dealing the business, which makes people respect it, and also, you know, to take it very highly position in this business.
From a production's point of view, if you have an IP already there, and it means you have already has a fan base there, which makes it more
safe.
Yeah, you could say so. It makes more sense for a giant company or let's say the well-structured company in China right now to decide it to put more human resources working with that. That might be a reason for the current situation here.
I think that's, like, basically the question of this whole podcast. Like, do you think that going so much forcefully on the IP things is going to be something that's going to assure the success of those movies in the box office, or is just like a way for producer and decision maker and investor to kind of reassure themselves?
I actually think it's quite both. So you can understand in a way for the companies to make the decisions to do a films based on the IP.
I think we should have a discussion about what what is China's most popular, most successful IP so far? I think it's actually Bunny Bears, which is a cartoon series for children. So for the past 8 years, we have seen 8 series coming out consecutively, so one series every year. And in the past Chinese New Year's break, we saw a box office of the new Bunny Bears movies for over 900 million yuan. Another popular IP for movies made for adult is probably Detective Chinatown. We have seen 3 movies in this IP so far, which is very rare to see within China. So we don't have anything like the Avengers that have just gone on for movie after movie after movie. The concept of IP kind of came into China at around 2015, but if we are talking in a broader sense, we have always seen these internet novels as well as classical novels like Journey to the West that has been adapted into many different TV and film works, but they're not kind of in a commercial sense, not in a commercialized systemic way. So for example, the novel The Lost Tomb has been adapted into films, TV series, and radio drama.
So when we talk about the IPs, and I think firstly I want to say, because for me the IP is kind of a valuable thing. Ever since like a thing or product or a logo or brand, anything, if it's like a wealthy, like a spread known by the people, it has its value, and then we can call it IP. But in the movie industry, the IP means like a good story, more sense like this. That is really like is something we need to separate. Because for me, I don't take anything as an IP, because I have seen some people, they change a song. They take a song, the name, to be an IP. Or, you know, they take like any books as an IP, no matter it's good or not. I don't think so. Because a good IP in the movie industry is a good story and a successful story. And already known and loved by a huge number of people.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Can you explain more about that song thing? I think that's a pretty funny example.
Yeah, there was a time in the past 10 years, there's a lot of things happened, and there was a peak time about chasing the IP, and people so enthusiastic about the IPs, they almost took everything as IP. It's just the name of the song.
Which song, for example?
同桌的你.
It's kind of like the person sitting next to you in the same desk.
Yeah, 同桌的你,还有何炅那个什么歌,栀子花开。 And the song is about, you know, back to the school life and a romantic relationship between you and the one sat next to you. So it's a really romantic and the classic song for the students years ago. And there's like a picture in this song. But I don't think it's an IP we were talking about.
Okay, so what happened with that? So they took the name of that song and they just created a movie based on that song with the same title and the same kind of feeling, but basically, did it work then?
I heard it's back box office kind of good because, you know, the sales, they have good sales, and maybe it's a, you know, the story thing and the feeling still connected to the people, and I think they took that as the valuable part. But okay, let's see the IP. It doesn't in the movie industry, or there was a time a lot of people jumping into this business, not like professional or movie lovers, and they just cared about the business model. They use that way to, oh, okay, let's buy the IP, let's get a good director, let's get the good actors, and that's a good product, sell it to the market, when that's, you know, count the money. But time tells, and a lot of, like, you know, negative examples show that it's a lesson, definitely. And people knew that, oh, just an IP, it doesn't make sure you made a good movie.
Okay, but sitting next to you, Signy, who is working with professional people at Bridging the Dragon. So could you explain to us a little bit what's your business model over there? Because I think you have like a really particular way of working with IPs and adapting IPs for Chinese cinema.
So as an organization that has been active since 2014, we've gradually created this kind of unique and strong network between the China and Europe film industries. But when the pandemic broke down, so the connections between China and Europe became harder, and that's why we found our organization, we find our position in introducing European titles or stories to Chinese producers.
Yeah, because if I may quickly stop you there, so if I recall back then, you would each year organize some kind of meetings between Chinese producer and European producer, and the idea was to make co-production. But for that, like, you would have people meeting in Berlin Film Festival or mm-hmm. Shanghai Film Festival. But then because, yeah, no one can travel anymore, so yep. basically there is no point. I don't know, I'm sure potential co-production could be happening, but if you don't meet in the same room, this is definitely going to be harder to pitch your story. So basically you are moving on to another business model.
Correct.
Okay, got it. So just to give some clarity for the listeners who wouldn't know Bridging the Dragon, just in case.
Yes, as you said, so before we were more focusing on the networking stuff as a non-profit organization. But since the situation completely changed, and we just kind of started this new business model to help the European titles go into the Chinese market in a different way, which is by remakes.
How does it work?
I think it works from two sides. So from the European side, it is a need for the European companies to sell their stories to Chinese market to obviously for more profits. But at the same time, I think there's a shortage of content in the Chinese industry as well. And that's why we've been approached by some Chinese producers in China within our friends of circles and also our Chinese members, and they were hoping us to represent them to find some suitable stories for them to do the adaptation.
And what are like the typical stories that you think Chinese producer would be more interested to adapt?
Well, so from my experience, there are two types of stories that might have the potential for the Chinese market. So the first type will be the stories with high concept. So by saying high concept, I mean some genres like thrillers and sci-fi films and also sometimes fantasy films. Okay, for example, the Spanish film, The Invisible Guest, is a huge success, and it has and the Chinese company bought the remake rights for the market. And okay, sometimes stories that are carefully plotted based on the high concept can also be a good materials for the remake. So for example, you have the Italian title called Perfect Stranger, which is also a Chinese made remake in the previous years. And another type for potential Chinese remake will be the stories that can resonate with Chinese audiences. So for example, for those stories, the Chinese producers, they are trying to find the European stories that can transplant into Chinese culture without too much trouble for Chinese audiences to understand. So for example, well,
if there is no example, it's fine.
I do know some like stories from other places, but for European, it is a little bit difficult sometimes. And I can give you Korean examples. So the Miss Granny.
Okay, so basically you're saying that it's easier to adapt like a East Asian story for Chinese market than something a bit remote like Europe.
Yeah, it's like no matter Europe or the state, and all the movies there are really difficult to do the remake, to do the Chinese version, because the people's thought, the logic, behavior, the stories, a lot of things about the society is very difficult, and to move their story and the relationship and the emotions and to shape it to a Chinese movie.
Well, I guess that's a good transition. But then, what about adapting real story from real Chinese people? Danley at Gushu FM, like, you guys are sourcing a lot of stories every week. You guys, if I'm not mistaken, produce three podcasts, which is about like It's basically this American Life, Chinese version. So you have like hundreds of stories coming out every year. And yeah, so can you explain more in details how you saw potential for adapting real movies from that?
Since the beginning of Gushi FM, we have seen more than 600 episodes of podcast as of now. So our team is working on finding the ones that are best suited for adaptation for the screen. So we are in the talks with many film companies, directors, and producers. And so far, we're seeing that stories about love or career and professions are seems to be the most in demand for adaptation. So for example, now we're doing a series on modern love stories. So these are going to be based on stories from Gushi FM about modern Chinese confusions or sweet moments in their love experience. And then we have this other work that is going to be based on the story of a food inspector. So that's going to be about food safety issues. It's quite like the movie Dying to Survive. I have also discussed with directors and screenwriters on what are the topics most fitted for adaptations. I talked to the screenwriter for Dying to Survive, who is also the one of the executive producers of the film. So the conclusion that we arrived at is that the work has to have universal value. So the way I understand it is that a lot of people are paying attention to these problems. Therefore, once we adapt it into a work for the screen, more people will pay attention to the work as well. So that is to say, people find it relatable to their current life circumstances.
I think it's great about adapting the story.
Okay, but do you guys see any potential difficulties that's going to come up for them?
Let's say the type of the movie is like about modern or like the nowadays the stories, it's definitely will be cared or will be paid attention by the majority of the people. But also another side is quite difficult to make it into a movie because it's related to the story and also the censorship. And yeah,
you're basically saying like if it's too mundane, if it's too basic, it's going to be hard to make it as a interesting story that will bring people to the cinema.
For me, I think the let's see what's happening in our daily lives, the stories, and it's more in China. I think it's more suitable to make it into a TV drama. Not in my opinion, but I think it is that way. It's happening because, like in the drama side, the people, the audiences, they are like they wanted to see what's going on, in different places in China, what's happening, and the hot topics about the life, the family, the kids, everything related to their daily life. But for the movie side, I think
it's more like a niche product for.
Yeah, because the Dying to Survive, that story, as you can tell, it's very, it's not happening a lot in China, because for this kind of topic, it's very sensitive and it's a big risk from the perspective of a production company. For us, the story are more and easier to manage, a kind of like the romantic story or the metropolitan stuff.
Well, I kind of agree what Kevin just mentioned because I think because the in China the people who goes to cinema to watch a film, they are normally very young people, so people in their 20s and not over 30s, I guess.
Damn it.
Yeah, so that's why you didn't see a lot of films in the Chinese big screen portraying the middle life crisis in China. And also Kevin mentioned that the stories about more mundane life might be suitable for the TV series. And I can totally understand that because for people who have the middle age crisis, they might be stay at home and just watch TV dramas. They don't really want to buy tickets in the cinema. That's sad.
Or they don't have time. Yeah, that's true.
中国的观众确实...
The audience in China is very diverse and often based on where they are. There are huge differences between Chinese cities. We are seeing all these different tiers of cities. So, for example, in what we call the first and second tier cities, the audience have a taste for films that are more experimental or even avant-garde. So, for example, recently there was a film very successful in the first, second tier cities called Be For Busy. It's a love story set in Shanghai. It's very romantic, but not in the sense of a traditional love story. On the other hand, we have the third and fourth tier cities, which have a taste for the kind of movies that we usually see released around Chinese New Year's time. So they are looking for comedy, they're looking for dramatic scenes and visual effects. So that poses some difficulty while we are looking at IP adaptations. We would need to be thinking about who we're adapting these stories for at the very beginning of the project.
And I was wondering, because let's say, how do you protect your story? Because I think like at a European producer, like they have a script, they have a real story. If you adapt it, I'm sure you can sue their ass if they are, you know, like copy, just basically copying the entire script. But if we're talking about a real story, like if I just open my Gusher FM official account or listen to your podcast, and then what is stopping me from just, you know, I listen to a good story, I'm like, oh, that could definitely be a movie material, and then I just write my script based about it. What stops other people from taking inspiration from all the content that you've been releasing online for free?
While adapting real stories, there is a real risk that someone will just sneakily take the stories and adapt it for free. However, in China, awareness of copyright is gradually on the rise. So right now, if you take a story from real people and you adapt it without their consent, you can do it, but there is quite a lot of risk. So there were already precedents of people getting into trouble for that. And now, even when you go out and look for investment for your film projects, investors would check if you have obtained authorization from the people whose story you're adapting from. So, for example, the films I mentioned before, like Dearests and Dying to Survive, both of them have gotten the consent from the characters whom they're based on.
Regarding the differences of taste of adapting East Asian story and European story, do you have anything you wanted to add on that? Because for me, it seems like an uphill battle, like to adapt European story, where I feel like there is like so many cultural differences that it would be hard like to transform for the Chinese market.
Yes, and I think the question about that is we are facing the same problem with what Danny has just mentioned about adapting true stories to into a film, because while we were looking for the super remakes or potential remakes for our Chinese company for our Chinese members, we are also trying to find these common values we all share as human beings. In order to make the story understandable for the Chinese audiences as well.
And it's hard?
It is hard, but it's still possible because we can also find some very touching stories from Europe. And I believe those kind of feelings are something that as a Chinese audience, they can also understand. So we actually managed to find those kind of European stories to Chinese members of us. And we actually have some projects like that, and they are ready for shooting in the future.
I think we touched about it, but we did not really answer it. Is that, are there some kind of sense, feeling in the film industry and TV series industry that if you have an IP, does this mean it's going to work, or does this really increase your level of success on the box office and on the viewership? Or it's, at the end of the day, if it's like still a bad film, then it's just not going to work.
Oh, well, I think the the good IP is definitely, you know, add more credits and more percentage to make into a successful movie. That's what happens everywhere in every country. You know, in the States, you know, the Marvels and coming from the comics and in China also, you know, we have a lot of good stories. So definitely that good IP is really helpful, and it is lucky to have a good story. But it just doesn't mean, you know, you can't make it into a successful movie. There's a lot of things you need to work on that, to develop and add value on that, from the script until the production side and also the distribution side. And you know, for people in the industry, we sometimes call it, you know, every movie has its destiny. It's, you can't control, it's, you know, actually the box office, because no matter you have a good story or no matter you have a good script, and a lot of the factors in it change the result, like, you know, the screening date, which is really important in China now. You know, it depends on what time you put your movie on the theater, like the public holiday, the May holiday, national holiday, which kind of determines the result of the movie. So yeah, back to the IP thing. So it's definitely a good thing. If you have a good IP, then just make sure you make the good IP into a good movie in the right way.
Yeah, and regarding the distribution, later on we will have a panel discussion about film distribution in China. Like, that's in the upcoming, it's in the pipeline of our episode, dear listener. Now I'm going to go a little bit sideways, but I feel there are not so much like Chinese content that can be produced on several medium. To give an example, like Kevin, you just mentioned Marvel, but I would see that, you know, Marvel, they would make film, they would make TV series, you would have video game, then it's based on comic books. And also on last episode here on Middle Earth, we talked about how Japanese manga can be seen on various medium, and that makes like the whole ecosystem work, because it feels like the content just feed itself. But I feel in China you don't really have something like this. Like, everyone talk about the Journey to the West and the Monkey King and everything, but because no one owes it, it goes in every direction. But I feel like there is no like one IP that someone managed to distribute on several medium at the same time currently. Maybe you would have a couple of online literature stories that get adapted into a TV series, but then that's it. Like, it's not like then it would be in video game and books and theme park or whatever. Would my assessment be correct? You can just say yes and we move on to the next question.
Well, in the industry of China, the IP thing, there are still like a beginning process, I think. It's getting mature, but for example, if you let's take the Hollywood, you know, movie as an example, they have a good story and they make it to a good movie, but the more profitable side is like making the franchise stuff and make it into, you know, different kinds of products in different way. Like, you know, a lot of cartoons like Frozen, you know, maybe their stuff, you know, like for the kids, franchise products are selling, you know, like quite, you know, three or four times quite size bigger as a box office. And yeah, it's definitely in China, we're trying to improve that, and like how to make a good IP into a good movie, but also develop the good franchise stuff, which is very helpful and necessary to make a good movie. Because if you just, you know, rely on everything on the box office, which is really a big risk, and it's just, you know, so difficult to bring the money back by the box office. Like, you know, if you, like, generally for the situation now in China, we have some really good movies, but we didn't make it into a good IP. And then they mentioned that cartoon, the Bunny Bear and the stuff. And most of the movies here had a good box office, but you didn't see a lot of franchise, or you didn't see the big success for the franchise side. So that IP development industry thing is definitely need put more effort.
I agree that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in order to have like a world famous Chinese IP in the future.
So we have seen a lot of films adapted from games or reality TVs. However, those are rather short-lived. It's not really a sustainable or healthy model for the film industry. So to make a film, there usually is a project cycle of 2 to 3 years. Maybe 2 to 3 years ago, the market really loves this game that we're adapting from. But once the movie comes out, the market has changed and maybe the popularity is no longer there. So we are rarely seeing any films adapted from these kind of IPs to have a long-lasting life.
To finish on that note, I think personally, like from all the people I've worked with, I feel that the decision maker, the people on top, the Lingdao of those world, like they are not really patient to invest on something and wait many years to wait a return. Like I feel there is still a strong sense of I want my return investment like next year. And I think in cultural industry that's, and if you want to build a IP, like you need time and you need like to, you know, have a long-term planning. But I feel this doesn't exist so much in China now. But anyway, Disney was after all founded in the 30s, so maybe our grandchildren will see like a Chinese IP being really successful. All right, I think now we can move on to my favorite part of the show, the quiz. We'll see who is the most knowledgeable among our guests. The rules are simple. I will ask a few questions. If you know the answer, you first buzz in with your name. Each correct answer gives you a point, and the person with the most points will obviously win the quiz. And the winner of the quiz will receive the latest issue of The World of Chinese. I think last time, Kevin, you won the quiz, actually.
I count myself lucky.
Sure.
好, 第一题, 在中国,
Question 1. What Chinese film based on an IP has the highest box office?
Kevin.
Yes, Kevin.
Monkey King?
Yeah, but...
Which Monkey King?
Oh, yeah, which one?
Xinyi, I'll try with Noja.
Yes, indeed. It is Noja.
So many Monkey Kings didn't beat Noja.
Yeah.
Which came out in 2019, which is currently the fourth best Chinese movie in terms of box office. So, second question. In 2016, Disney sued a Chinese company for making an animation film. Can you tell me why?
Okay, Xinyi. I don't remember exactly the titles of the film, but I think the characters are based on the moto, like
yes,
the car racing stuff.
Yes.
And they are using the same kind of like images. And I don't know whether the story is the same, but... anyway, it got sued by Disney.
Yes, indeed. So congratulations, you won the second point.
Yay!
Yeah, because in 2015, they made the film The Autobots, which was basically a copy of the Disney movie Cars, made in 2006. And Disney was compensated around $200,000 US, which was like 1/6 of the total box office. So good for them, I guess. Okay, third and last question. I think we would know who is going to win the quiz, but maybe we can have a runner-up. Third and last question. Let's play Guess the Number. Can you tell me how many adaptation was made from The Monkey King in China? You can each pick up a number. And I will count the China Republic, Hong Kong, and Taiwan, but not Japan that has produced 5 films.
So just we just only talk about the movies, right?
Yeah, movies, not TV series.
Okay, Kevin, I guess 35.
Xinyi, I'll go for 40.
Dan Lei, 20.
Wow, okay. Well, Xinyi, this is pretty impressive. You win because it is actually 40 in total.
Really?
Yes, there was 15 animation film and 25 feature film. Okay, well, congratulations. You win with 3 points.
I got exactly... right.
I don't know, I'm purely like just guessing.
Okay.
By the lottery.
Okay.
Well, congratulations for winning the quiz, and here is your prize, the latest World of Chinese magazine. On that note, we will wrap up the show. So a big thanks to Aijer for helping me finding some of the guests. And glad to have you until the end, dear listener. If you like what we do at the Middle Earth podcast, you can actually support us. You can share this episode to your friend, recommend us guests, or you can support the World of Chinese magazine that writes amazing articles in this more and more polarized world. If you want to know more behind the headlines, go to theworldofchinese.com and order your latest copy. If you are impressed by this show impeccable quality, you know who to call for any production service here in China, finding stories, shooting permit, bringing your IP as well, now why not, and bring your YouTube station to Bilibili. We do it all. Today's episode was produced and edited by Aladdin Faré,
translated by Chu Siyi,
music by Sean Calvo,
and distributed by the World of Chinese Podcast Network. Hope to see you next time and stay safe. Bye-bye.
想想怎么说这个事儿。嗯
，We'll sue their asses. Looks like our listener are still doing their dishes.
Yeah, all very committed to their workout.
Yeah, for sure.
So, since you're still here, if you want to learn more about Chinese society, culture, history, and language, you should go to theworldofchinese.com or find us on WeChat, and you'll find an amazing array of award-winning, in-depth, original reporting on China and amazing videos and podcasts too.
All right. Well, until the next issue then.